Hello, I'm Eamon.
I'm Conrad.
And we are...
Mega City Film Club!
Conrad, Happy New Year!
Happy New Year to you as well, Eamon. Here we are in the distant future, the year 2025. Oh my gosh. Like, listen, I've seen movies where we were on like Interstellar by this point, you know?
Well, we are currently, we're not quite Interstellar. We are in between us as we record this, but this will be the first episode to come out in 2025. We're in that strange period between Christmas and New Year where nobody knows what day it is or what's going on. And there's, we've all eaten far too much chocolate.
Absolutely.
How is LA in between us treating you at the moment, Conrad?
It's fine. Very overcast today. You know, it's sort of, it's where we like, where it starts to almost rain for about 2 months or so. That's sort of the Los Angeles weather, I guess. I should warn everybody in the spirit of what we're talking about today. I am cat sitting it for a friend, and so you may hear cat noises throughout the course of the podcast. I apologize for that.
No worries at all. There is a loose cat in the podcast. A cat called
Spruce. Spruce the cat, like the tree.
Spruce may make a minor meowing appearance. Right. Well, let's get to it because we have two treats to discuss today. You said before we record, this is a multimedia episode of the Film Club Book Club. Mm-hmm. Start us off. How do we begin, Conrad?
The only way we can with Thrill One, Kraven the Hunter.
So movie time first. We've been to the movies separately as ever. Kraven the Hunter, directed by J.C. Chandor, written by Richard Wenk, Art Markham and Wayne Holloway, starring Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Ariana DeBose, Alessandra Nivola and Russell Crowe, two Oscar winners in the cast of this movie. I'll tip ahead slightly, Conrad. If we thought Russell Crowe was eating scenery in the last Thor movie, well,
I mean, you know, listen, Russell Crowe has developed a taste for scenery. He loves that accent because I think he does it in The Pope's Exorcist as well. You know, like if you can, if you've got a movie where he can be kind of Russian or Greek or something or other, he'll do it. He's ready. He loves it.
I always mention the numbers, so I'll say a budget of somewhere around $110 million, and so far a box office of $45 million, and it disappears from my multiplex this week. I was checking times, it's gone. Mm-hmm.
I know when it was coming out, we were both basically saying, like, we've got to see this fast.
Got to see this fast, yeah. We will come back at the end in a moment to the question of whether we're going to get any more of these Sony Spider-Verse movies. So first of all, Kraven the Hunter, the movie. Set the scene for us, Conrad. Quick synopsis. What the heck is going on in this movie?
Oh, man. I mean, it's the standard kind of thing. Like, young dude gets mauled by a lion and gets magic hunting powers, I guess. You can kind of, you know, you're sort of your standard suite of super physical abilities and senses. And he can kind of talk to animals a little bit. And, but like, he's also like, his dad's like a Russian gangster, but he decides he's going to hunt gangsters and becomes this sort of underground legend, killing baddies in unusual situations and stuff like that. He meets a lady who's a lawyer, who's also the one who gave him the magic potion that gave him the superpowers when he was a kid, who has a mysterious past, as you do, of course. Oh, sorry. And he's also got a brother who's like, you know, weak, not as brave or whatever as Kraven is. And this leads to sort of mob drama, I guess, to organized crime drama. The brother gets kidnapped. And so Kraven, with the help of the lawyer lady Calypso, has to go find him. And this leads to a bunch of big set piece battles where, so, you know, a lot of he's only one man type shenanigans. In along the way, he fights the Foreigner, who's a Marvel assassin guy who can sort of like, hypnotize people and then do what he wants. I've read a little bit of that character, and it's sort of interesting to me because I thought in the comics they were like, they thought he had a bunch of like teleportation powers or like things like that. But no, he was actually like just like you'd think he was teleporting away, but he's actually like just hypnotizing you and then running off or something. And then big confrontation, as you would, with a hunter character fighting animals with the rhino, who is sort of a biotech rhino. He's got a skin. Basically, he's got real bad eczema that turns him into a literal rhino. And they sort of have a CGI fight, basically. And it ends, like, I guess spoilers, I don't know. But it ends with a lot of balls in the air. Of like, yeah. I guess, you know, as in the comics, the weaker brother who is liberated from his captors, you know, a year passes off screen. He becomes there's teasing that he's gained superpowers. There's like apparently a coming conflict for control of the superpowered underworld between him and Kraven. And of course, the movie ends with Kraven putting on the iconic vest with the fur lining and looking into a mirror in the Kraven pose and like, ooh, that's the end. Or is it the beginning?
The final shot of the movie. And you brought up to me before we recorded this meme, this idea of Surf Dracula. Tell us about the Surf Dracula idea.
Yeah, so I want to talk about Surf Dracula. And I forget if I've talked about this in the past, but it's something that I really think about a lot with superhero media. And it was a Twitter post from 2021 by a guy named at Topher Florence. And it said, back in the day, if you did a TV show called Surf Dracula, you'd see that fool surfing every week in new adventures. But in the streaming era, the entire first season got to be a long-ass flashback to how he got the surfboard until you finally see him surf for 5 minutes in the finale. And very much Kraven is a Surf Dracula movie. Like, the whole thing is just like, the whole movie is leading up and setting pieces on the board for what seems like what the actual movie will be, which is like a battle between Kraven and his brother, the Chameleon, for control of the superpowered underworld. And like, you know, especially like just that he gets the costume or whatever at the, you know, the movie ends literally with him putting on the costume. Like, he puts on the costume, looks at it, and, you know, cut to black. Yes. And, like, is sort of, like, just the problem, I think, that – or, like, something that I think can be a problem with superhero movies generally is that origin stories are so easy to are such an easy plot line for these kinds of movies. It's, oh, yeah, like, he's got powers. How'd he get the powers? He's got a suit. How'd he get the suit? And, like, that can – and, you know – that could be the first act, like, especially, you know, and obviously, like, you can't just have a character like, or it's harder to have a character just show up in a costume with powers. But I feel like it shouldn't be the whole movie, you know, and like when it is the whole movie, it just feels kind of lazy in terms of like, I don't know, like telling an original story, telling a story in a new way or not just the same way that all these superhero movies have been, you know, even something like. Like, even like, you know, my personal bugbear or a fave, the Benedict Cumberbatch Doctor Strange movie, if you clock it, like, he actually has like the full costume and cloak of levitation and stuff at the exact halfway point of the movie. And then, like, at the very least, then, like, once he's there, then he's kind of got the powers, he's doing stuff. It's not like, you know, again, just to have it end with them getting the powers, like, now I am Kraven, now I am X, what, you know, this super, that, this name, that name, that kind of stuff is like, I don't know. It just feels samey. It just feels like, you know, a way to telling stories that we don't have to be doing in 2025, you know, or 2024, yeah. I guess.
I will say this movie starts with the sequence of Kraven being incarcerated in some dreadful Siberian prison where he is going to kill a gangster and then escape from the prison and then hop into the back of his cargo plane, which is flown by a sort of like unknown, unnamed female pilot who I don't think we get to see again or hear him again.
Well, because I think later when they flee to his geodesic dome in Russia, she flies them out as well, right. I think.
Oh, okay. But I sort of wanted more of that sort of movie. If there'd been a heist or a caper movie where they had to plan one of his complicated hits on terrible gangsters. But instead, of course, we then get the flashbacks and the story, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and like that has some cool parts because he's like parkouring around the prison and stuff. He kills the guy because it's like this gangster who's in prison, but he's got a very posh cell full of luxuries, like a TV screen, TVs and a tiger skin rug. And so Craven kills him by like pulling the teeth out of the head on the tiger skin and stabbing him with that. Like, that's pretty cool. Like that. I enjoy a found items like murder kind of thing. Yeah. Like, it had some interesting parts. You know, there's some interesting stuff in here, but in the end, it just becomes another kind of bog standard, like origin story, like same old stuff, I guess.
How do you feel about Aaron Taylor Johnson and there seems to be a debate as to whether or not he's good or bad as an actor. Where are you?
I mean, man, he's buff, I'll tell you that much.
He's in great shape.
I think he's pretty good. I liked him in The Fall Guy this year, also in 2024. Another big flop that he was in, actually.
And he was in that Bullet Train movie with Brad Pitt, wasn't he? Yeah,
definitely.
He is, of course, being talked about quite a lot as possibly being the next James Bond. Having, as you say, been in 2024, been in at least two big budget flop movies, probably won't have helped with it.
I don't know. It could make him a plucky underdog for Bond. That's what they like to do with the character these days, is my understanding, I guess. Whatever Pamela Broccoli's into or something like that. I could see him do it. I don't know. I don't really like... very much my Americanness here. I don't have a ton of strong feelings about Bond. Like, if the movies are good, I'm super happy for him. Like, he seems can be suave, has dark hair. That's kind of what I'm looking for in a Bond, I guess.
Craven the Hunter, the movie, has not done very well. Mm. It's not going to make its money back, I think. It's certainly, I would say, it's not going to make the double the budget, which they tell us that you need these days.
Right.
Who knows? It may do incredibly well on streaming. We shall see.
Because I don't even think, unlike, say, Joker 2, I don't think it even has the toxic reputation that gets a lot of streaming views the way Joker 2 did.
Now, you and I have mused on this podcast and also in various pubs over pints of Guinness about the Sony Spider-Verse and what the heck's going on with these movies, that they keep making them. How much money can Sony keep throwing at this idea?
I don't know. I don't know how much, it's wild to think that, not just money, but how much can the culture withstand, just them making these terrible superhero movies? Like, it's bad for the brand, Eamon, if anything else, I mean,
we have seen Morbius, we have seen Madame Web, and we've now seen Craven the Hunter. We have, of course, talked about the fact that the Venom movies do make money, but the other three just have all been financial flops, haven't they?
And watchwords of bad films, things that that have become memes of terrible superhero movies,
Yep. Morbius became a meme. What's her name? Dakota Johnson for Madame Web became a meme for even not being particularly interested in promoting her own movie. Even she thought it was bad.
Yeah, but this movie came out with the news that they were sort of tapping out for this Spider-Verse, this series of anti-hero movies of Spider-Man villains, I guess. And we might see the end of it. I don't know. 'Cause I've also saw things that were oh, they're going to cross over with the Spider-Verse, with the actual Spider-Verse movies or something like that. Although I wonder if that just means that they'll have a cameo or someone will say it's Morbin time in Beyond the Spider-Verse when that comes out in the even more distant future, something like that.
So but it like, seems yeah. unlikely we're going to get the Sony Sinister Six movie where they all team up then, it seems.
I can't imagine, like, you hear all these things about people talking about profitability and stuff. You think about, like, the Batwoman. What was that movie or show that was just completely canceled for tax write-off reasons?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the idea that, you know, in the end, in a very comic booky, in a very comic book industry sort of thing, like, you know, they're here to make money. They're here to, like, you know, to do things that, you know, yeah, helps the brand, makes the money, all that kind of stuff. And like, you look at these Sony Spider movies, half of them are horrifying flops. You know, like if you think of it, three Venoms and then Morbius, Madam Web and Kraven. Ugh, like why at some point it's just sort of throwing money after bad, throwing good money after bad. And I have to think like, you think about this year, or I don't know, in my mind, if like, I kind of saw Marvel as trying to like, they realized that they had like sort of overwhelmed the market, I think sort of post Endgame, and had tried to kind of take this year off almost. Like the only MCU movie this year is Deadpool Wolverine, right?
Yeah.
And like, it seems like they're sort of like pausing to then, you know, come back with Fantastic Four in what, next summer in 2025. As opposed to letting the land lie fallow for a while. Instead, like 2024 is like the superhero movies of 2024 are like, yeah, they're Madam Web, they're Kraven, you know, like these not great movies that have that instead of letting people recover from superhero fatigue, have just sort of made people be like, oh, like all these, now they're just these superhero movies are bad, you know? And if I'm like, you know, whatever, the Marvel executives, I'm like, dude, like you guys are not helping in this situation. I don't know. That's a little insidery, Eamon. I'm of course on the outside looking in, but what it seems like to me, I guess.
As I say, this movie is going to be gone from theaters by the time this episode comes out. Should people watch Kraven the Hunt on streaming when it arrives there, Conrad?
Man, I mean, I'll admit that like, there's some okay, like this movie is not like, it's not as bad as Madam Web or Morbius, I think. Like, okay. You know, let me damn Kraven with faint praise by saying that it's again, one of these, like, this movie's fine. Like in the end, there's some kind of cool kills. If you're a fan, especially if you're like me and you enjoy an occasional forest trap, like where someone hits a trip line and like the big log full of spikes come flying out and hit somebody. There's some of that. And just sort of, yeah, just like general, like hunt, stealthy killing and stuff. You know, Russell Crowe's obviously once again, like having a ball playing the dad gangster from from the first John Wick movie, basically. Like, there's some, you know, there's some okay stuff in here.
Yeah.
Like if it's like a Saturday afternoon, you just kind of want an action movie that you haven't seen before. There's worse choices than Kraven, I think. Okay. So like, you know, with that, I would, you know, again, like a 3-star, you know, 7 out of 10, like,
okay,
fine, but don't rush out to see it. And like the fact they aren't making more is seems like not a great loss to me, at least. Yeah.
I won't be rushing to watch it again when it arrives on streaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've already had my money, so yeah, fine. Okay, well, let's switch media slightly. That was Kraven the Hunter. Take us into our next adventure, Conrad, with what? Where do we go next?
Oh, well, let's go right to the end with Thrill 2, Kraven's Last Hunt.
Wow. Now, as regular listeners know, I was going to use this film as an excuse to crowbar some comics, American comics in.
This is very much like a 2-year-long plan, Eamon, I think. I remember us sitting in Acosta, like, together when I was in England. And hearing that this movie was coming out and like literally being like, oh, okay, well then, yeah, we'll definitely just do a combo film club, movie club, book club about this and Craven's Last Hunt. Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, let's do it.
So this was written by J.M. DeMatteis, art by Mike Zeck and Bob McLeod, colors by Mike Zeck, Bob Sharon, and Janet Jackson, not that one. Letterer Rick Parter, edited by Jim Salicrup, appeared in Web of Spider-Man issues 31 and 32, Amazing Spider-Man 293 and 294, and Spectacular Spider-Man 131, 132 in late 1987. This was when there were three different Spider-Man monthlies on the stands, and they crossed over this six-part story across the three titles, which I think, certainly from my memory, was one of the earliest examples of somebody of them doing that.
It definitely happened periodically. I mean, I remember when I would like maybe like God 20 years ago now. Oh no, when I was reading, what got me back into reading comics was the Marvel Essential collections, which were these black and white sort of phone book sized comics, comic collections, which just have like all of Amazing Spider-Man basically. And I remember I stopped reading them when I got to like volume 7 or 8, because it started crossing over with Spectacular Spider-Man came out, and you'd have stories that would either start in Spectacular and end in Amazing or vice versa. And while there was also an Essential Spectacular Spider-Man, I couldn't carry around two phone books at the same time and like start in one and finish in another. That was too much for me. So it happened occasionally. And like, I definitely remember like, also this is probably a couple years later, like they'd have like, often there would be like a summer story where in the American, you know, American annuals came out in the summer, and there'd be like a story. I vividly remember a Spider-Man New Warriors story that just played out entirely in the annuals of the three Spider-Men and New Warriors, for instance.
All right. Okay.
These little mini crossovers keeping you buying all three Spider-Man books. You can't just buy one, Eamon. No way.
Well, as I'm old, Conrad, as you probably know, indeed, I bought these comics
myself as well.
Nice. Off the stand. So I still have the original floppy.
Oh my gosh, that is amazing.
From 1987. I wasn't buying the Spider-Man titles regularly at the time, but somehow I'd obviously got wind that there was a big story coming up. And so you had to buy these, all the three Spider-Man titles. When did you first encounter this story, and in what form, Conrad?
I mean, I feel like it's one of these ones that, like I said, you know, my main Spider-Man reading was mostly silver into Bronze Age stuff. That's sort of like 60s and 70s Spider-Man. Like, I think the story I stopped reading was the first time he crossed over with the Claremont X-Men, actually, like, which started in Spectacular and ended in Amazing, and sort of I was lost, but like very like, you know, let me know what time period was, just because these guys are showing them in other comics, you know. Like, for me, this was one that, like, you know, probably because it, like, wasn't a big part of my childhood reading, I guess. Like, maybe because it was grim or hadn't quite been collected yet. I remember being a kid and, like, 3 or 4 years after this one came out, maybe in, like, early 90s maybe, and you know, kids passing around, say, the Dark Phoenix Saga trade paperback, or those, or one or two Venom trades, like ones where of the initial fights between Spider-Man and Venom, those ones. But this one didn't get a ton of play when I was a kid, but I know over time it definitely gains this big reputation and stuff. One that I hadn't really read, just because I wasn't like, I don't know, I was reading a ton of Dark Age stuff for a long time. So honestly, I didn't really read it until, while I heard it and heard it was good, you know, fake fan Conrad, I guess, I hadn't really read it until I got the book that I have it in, which is part of the Hachette Legendary Collection, bought from a W.H. Smith's when I was in England.
Oh, right. Okay. An English purchase.
Exactly. Yes. You know, £11.99, I'll have you know. But so that was my first time reading in this collection, which also has, I guess, The Amazing Spider-Man Soul of the Hunter, which is sort of this follow-up from 92, which sort of tries to take some additional themes that is not as good, honestly. But, you know, but so, yeah, so it was one that I had heard about but hadn't actually, like, read myself until sort of prepping here. So it's a new one experiencing for me to experience with. But, man, it is really good.
Yeah, so this is, cut to the end, this is really good. Craven's Last Hunt. No, it's all right. Craven's Last Hunt, six-part story from the late 1980s. It is often spoken about as one of the best Spider-Man stories of all time. Probably, it certainly should be spoken about as one of the best Kraven the Hunter stories of all time. Set the scene for us, Conrad, particularly for people who haven't read this comic. Yeah. What is the sort of setup of Kraven's Last Hunt?
Well, I guess, I mean, the main things are like, it's, you know, listen, I'm gonna blow your mind, Abe, and tell you that Peter Parker's having a rough time.
Right. Surprise.
Very unusual. In this case, what he's, I think he's pretty newly married to MJ, to Mary Jane. He's wearing the black suit, which is so cool. And he's recently had a friend of his died in the pursuit of superhero shenanigans, basically. And so that's weighing heavily on his mind. Meanwhile, Kraven, who's like a Silver Age superhero, a Spider-Man foe, very like old timey, like, you know, like, yeah, like greatest hunter. So he's come to hunt Spider-Man. This is a pretty common comics trope, I think. Even Bill Savage fought a big hunter in Invasion, you know. He's apparently just gone over the deep end, basically, and has decided that he's going to end things once and for all. He's doing weird jungle drugs, I guess. And he decides that he's, yeah, has had a grave had a gravestone commissioned for Spider-Man. He's going crazy. And I guess at the same time, a villain, I think a Captain America, you know, a crazy sewer being called Vermin is stalking the streets of New York, killing and eating women, basically. And so Kraven sort of, and like, you know, he basically does what I think happens, not like all the time, but like periodically, superhero villains decide to get serious. And we realize they've been pulling their punches the whole, like, you know, this whole time. And so Kraven gets serious. He captures Spider-Man and seemingly kills him and buries him in the gravestone he's had commissioned, then puts on his costume and starts fighting crime, but does it very brutally, killing people and stuff like that. And like, I'm doing a bad job of like doing what I think the money in this story is, which is that DeMatteis really takes you inside these characters' heads as we're doing it. We hear Kraven's insane rantings and like his hallucinations as he kind of takes like herb, like these mystic herbs that have prolonged his life, but also are clearly driving him insane as he fights, as he like just like fights big walls of spiders and stuff like that. It's very strange. And eventually he hits on Vermin and decides that he'll hunt Vermin to show that he's better than Spider-Man.
Because last time it took Captain America and Spider-Man to beat Vermin. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. And so he does, he manages to take Vermin out. They have a big confrontation in the sewers, and Kraven captures Vermin. And at the same time, Peter Parker, Spider-Man, who's been literally buried in a coffin for the last 2 weeks, manages to dig his way out of the grave and is not well pleased by the situation.
No, he's not happy about it. As you say, Peter Parker, things aren't going well.
You know, I mean, standard stuff, I guess. And so this, of course, leads to a big three-way confrontation between Kraven, Spider-Man, and Vermin, which Kraven seems to mostly win, actually. Like, it very much seems like he kind of lets them both go towards the end of their fight. I feel like he feels like he's proven everything he can. or he needs to, or that he like feels like content in his actions or something and sort of lets Vermin go, then has sort of a like a verbal confrontation with Spider-Man and then like tells him to go as well.
And then clue in the title, as you've said in a previous episode, it's Kraven's Last Hunt.
Indeed, yes. Indeed. Yeah. And so that then leads to the big final, you know, Titanic episode, which is Vermin and Spider-Man sort of, you know, having a final showdown where Spider-Man, you know, captures Vermin. Meanwhile, Kraven both sends letters to exonerate Spider-Man of the murders that he's committed in the Spider-Man suit. And in a very like dramatic, like just like not like graphic, but very like big, like a moment, he like takes his own life basically. And yeah, like sort of, and the story ends with his blood staining his family photo and then being like buried in a grave that says, here lies Kraven. He died with honor, that sort of thing.
It's amazing stuff. It is, as you say, this is a darker Spider-Man story. There is, you know, death and suicide. As you say, you get the impression that nobody's pulling their punches in this one. Mm-hmm. Vermin is a very tough character to defeat, even though he is, Vermin has his own sort of mental health issues clearly going on.
Yeah.
He's a very tough, physically very tough character to beat.
Indeed.
J.M.D. Mateus in his writing, I was fascinated that when we were doing some of the background reading, that this he'd originally sort of conceived this as a story featuring the character Wonder Man and his half-brother, the Grim Reaper.
Mm-hmm.
But he also apparently pitched the idea as a Batman Joker story to DC, which I didn't know about.
Yeah, I think the version I have sort of has like this rundown. Actually, we talked about this before, but it has sort of this rundown. I guess on his blog, he like sort of talked about how he developed this story and then how he like figured out the characters for it and stuff like that. He kind of talks about how like, yeah, he had originally for Wonder Man and then it was going to be a Batman story, but like DC, it was too close to Killing Joke had just come out and they sort of felt like, oh, like it's another one of these like stories about death and resurrection. So maybe like we don't want to do it right now. And so eventually came to Spider-Man, and in the apparently also talks about how like he was going to make an original character for it, but only when he found out about Kraven's Russian backstory that he decided like, you know, he really wanted to do Kraven for this, for the to be the main antagonist, I guess.
Hmm.
And sort of like, I don't know, I don't think it comes up too much, but just sort of playing, or like he likes it being like sort of this Dostoevsky-esque like like Russian depressing Russian sort of thing or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, Di Matteis's writing is exceptional in these six issues. It is quite grim stuff. You do get the impression that, I want to say that Kraven's playing a sort of deadly game, and it's sort of different to some of the usual superhero shenanigans that we would have got in the Spider-Man titles and others at the time. I'm thinking of, there's a moment when Mary Jane is threatened by two men in the street, and she's at first relieved when she sees the black-suited character arriving because she thinks it's Peter. It's not.
Right.
It's Kraven wearing the suit. And the way he deals with these two men is so brutal. And it's like you think, oh, yeah, this is a very different comic book. There's, you know, Kraven is doing things very differently in this. So, yeah, it's an amazing story and very well told.
Yeah, something I really want to mention, it does a very what I think was a very, like, I guess, Dark Age comic book, that's sort of like late, like 80s style of, you know, it's got a lot of inner monologue, like you're in the heads of the three main players of Spider-Man, of Kraven, of Vermin. I think Rick Parker, the letter does some interesting stuff, just having different fonts and like box colors for all these different, each one, like Kraven, like the letters are literally written differently for Kraven versus, which has sort of this like extravagant, like a, big calligraphy letters, whereas, you know, Spider-Man's, of course, more of a sort of prosaic, regular comic book font. And Vermin has this kind of like typewriter, like courier new, I guess, to use the like a type font, like sort of just that, like that you're in these characters' heads, and they because they have different voices, they're actually written differently and stuff, which I think is really interesting. Also, David Tayes plays around a lot with, especially in the start of things, like intrusive thoughts almost. Like I really like towards the start when Kraven is capturing Spider-Man, like you're in Spider-Man's head as he's sort of thinking through the fight and stuff. And then you've got like, and so he's got these yellow word box, yellow narration boxes, but then there are also these red narration boxes that are clearly like these intrusive thoughts that are like popping in as he's doing things, you know, that sort of start with like, you know, he gets hit by like a net and it just says like, you know, terrific with a period, like very droll and sarcastic and stuff. But then as things happen, like he realizes like, wait a minute, like, you know, why is Kraven, like Kraven's got a rifle. What's he doing with that? Like, and that sort of like shows up in these different colored, like in different, like, yeah, just different narration boxes. I think they sort of show that there's sort of different kinds of thoughts than the other ones. And I think really does an interesting job of making the story feel very tense and very like not just narration, but actually being in kind of the head of the characters and stuff like that, which I think is a really neat way of doing this sort of storytelling. You know, and again, like I said before, sort of for the era, because I feel like that sort of 80s is very narration boxes as thought bubbles at, like, you know, that's sort of like the internal monologue in the narration box is something I think of as a very like sort of 80s storytelling thing, as opposed to the word bubbles of earlier eras and things like that. That makes this one interestingly of its era, I think, because, and I think it's, you know, it's fun to sort of like, yeah, just to kind of be aware of that and how storytelling's changed in comic books as well.
It is, as you say, it is from that very interesting dark era towards the end of the 80s. Obviously, Watchmen, Dark Knight Returns, you've mentioned The Killing Joke. I'm thinking also of The Daredevil Born Again by Frank Miller.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah, I mean,
Well, the comparison I was thinking of there is that for several issues in Daredevil Born Again, he hasn't got the costume on. Mm-hmm. You know, he won't, you know, he's Matt Murdock is going through hell and not putting the costume on, which must have been an interesting challenge for the editors. And here in this 6-issue story, as you've already said, Conrad, Spider-Man is buried alive for at least two of the, or if not three of the you know, yeah. He's out of action for three of these issues, isn't he? Which is an amazing choice.
Absolutely.
And I
think, you know, and you can see the interesting thing too of, you know, a little bit of the difference between how you sell a comic and what's in a comic, just because in all the covers Kraven's wearing his Kraven costume, but in all the stories he's wearing the Spider-Man, you know, the actual body is wearing the Spider-Man costume. And sort of, and in some cases that's, if you think about, again, if you just picked up one of the comics in the middle of this run, just that, like, you know, that's how they communicate. There's a guy in a Spider-Man costume, but it's not like Spider-Man, you know, because like otherwise it's sort of hard to read that almost.
Mm. Well, let's talk about the covers for a moment. We'll turn to Mike Zeck's art, possibly the best Mike Zeck art you'll get anywhere. And interestingly, again, I learned that he did the 6 covers before he started on any of the interiors for this, which is amazing. Nice. And the covers, these 6 issues covers, in terms of comic book covers, they're just spectacular, aren't they?
They're all wet. Oh no, everyone except for Amazing Spider-Man 294 are all very wet covers. It's either raining or they're in the sewers and stuff. Yeah. There's all these either rain coming down or the water of the sewers and giving it dramatic motion and stuff like that. Really, yeah, again, just a really iconic, you know, Spider-Man caught in the net, Kraven exulting, holding the costume in front of the gravestone, you know, Spider-Man confront, I guess it's actually Kraven as Spider-Man confronting Venom in the shadows using the black Spider-Man costumes that all you see is the, all you see is the eyes and the symbol in the darkness as opposed to his actual body and stuff like that. Your iconic Spider-Man crawling out of the grave. Ooh, that's cool. That sort of stuff. Oh, it's real good.
I mean, like I say, I don't know how I knew this story was coming up, and I knew to get all three titles. But actually, if you'd seen these issues, these covers on the newsstand or in the comic book shop at the time, you'd have gone, oh, I'm picking that up, whatever that is.
Absolutely. They're that very looks cool. Great. Yeah, definitely.
And then, of course, he does the interior artwork and tells the story. And again, it is just fantastic throughout. I mean, of course, as you say, helped by the lettering and the internal monologue, but just great. And I do like the fact that maybe not on the street level, but we can tell the difference between Craven in the black suit and mm-hmm. Peter Parker in the black suit. You know,
yeah, I think he does do a pretty good job of just making, like, you know, Craven, he's like thicker. You know, he's like a big muscular guy as opposed to a more slight Peter Parker. You know, in the suit.
Mike Zeck, I think I probably knew him best for doing the Secret Wars artwork. I think that's right.
Hmm.
A few years before this, obviously where he would get the black suit. But this was, I think this is my favorite of his. This is
nice. Yeah, I'm pretty, honestly, it's an area of like this era of artists is one that I'm pretty blind about. So I don't have a ton of opinions, but I definitely love the artwork here. And I think it is cool just that this is a story where he's just sort of incidentally got the black suit, I guess. Because I think most of my experience has been specifically in Venom and Venom related things. And so to just sort of have the black suit along for the ride and not be a big deal is like, it's very, I don't know, but there's the 80s kid in me just sees Spider-Man, the black suit, and thinks, oh, that's so cool. Look at that thing, you know?
So this is in the Amazing Spider-Man run. It's 293 and 294. And as I said in our notes, because we looked it up, 299 and 300 is coming up when it is revealed that the black suit is a symbiote. So Venom doesn't appear until then.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I just don't know where it is in the timeline. So like he's just wearing. Is it a symbiote at like in this story? Is it intelligent or like even like is it clothes that he's taking on and off? I don't know. Like,
as I understand it,
like is Craven yes. like because like Craven doesn't he doesn't unmask Spider-Man when he buries him. He's of course not interested in that aspect of Spider-Man, right?
But yeah.
There's no like even tease of like. It's not like of them trying to take it off and being like, oh, like this thing's sticky or something like that, I guess. That's wild, actually. I assume it was post-Venom just because I guess we see him in that cover where Craven's in front of the gravestone and he's holding the Spider-Man costume where it's like sort of classic Spider, you know, one-piece pajamas or whatever. But wow. Okay, that's crazy.
Well, I am not the greatest, as we said in our last film club, I'm not the greatest Venom expert, but I believe that the suit that Spider-Man gets on Battleworld in Secret Wars mm-hmm. actually turns out to be Venom.
Right.
But it's not revealed until...
Yeah, I knew he got it from Secret Wars. I used to know, I don't know the timeline that well. Yeah. It's definitely something that like, man, I should get like a Marvel Unlimited subscription, you know, whatever. It would not hurt to read all of Spider-Man, Eamon. Like, I don't know. Along with all my other irons in the fire, you know.
Yeah. So what Craven is wearing is a suit, but what Peter is wearing is actually, I think, the symbiote suit.
That is wild.
Yeah. Okay, so.
These comics, Eamon. Oh, man. Like, it's an interesting topic, actually.
We'll have to look into that.
Who'd have imagined, you know?
Sorry. So, possibly one of the greatest Spider-Man stories ever told. Certainly probably the best Kraven the Hunter story ever told. Mm-hmm. Just wonderful comics from the 1960s. From the 1980s. Probably the one from that dark era that doesn't get talked about quite as much as some of those other big titles, I guess. Mm. But it's pretty good stuff, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would, you know, it's not like, I think, you know, the three obviously from that era are like you said, like Watchmen, Dark Knight, and Killing Joke. Like those are the top three, definitely. And then I think you can, and then I think if you're doing a Mount Rushmore, then you get a little bit more, there's a lot more argument for that sort of four and five spots. Like, is it sort of some of the Miller Daredevil stuff? Is it this, you know, there's a couple other things moving around in that sort of 80s era, I guess, in terms of sort of like what your top stuff is.
Batman Year One.
Yeah, exactly. But this is definitely like, I think it's really good just as like one, just to get other creators in the mix. I think like the 80s can't just be Alan Moore and Frank Miller. Even like, you know, like we need
J.M. DeMatteis.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's at least a little something that Craven brings to the table, is just that, like, let's get some more names for people to look at, you know, for, if you're trying to talk to people about comic history and stuff like that, you know.
Okay, well, let's do book club regulars and let's do the Fantasy Grail Page game. I'm going to guess that we cannot possibly afford a Mike Zeck page or cover from this six-issue run. They must go for big bucks.
You got to think that, like, any one page would be enormous.
So I've offered you all the pages and all six covers. Which is going to be your Fantasy Grail page to hang in the virtual art gallery, Conrad? What's it going to be?
It's a tough question. You know, I really wanted a cool... Like, there's some really great stuff of all the characters, including, like, some really great Craven stuff. But because it doesn't come up that much in the book club, I really wanted to get some really sweet Spider-Man action for this entry, because you just don't get a chance. And so you got to go big. I think it's hard not to pick... Sorry, I don't have page numbers, I guess, but like this one where Spider-Man comes back from the grave, from the dead, and like crawls out of the tombstone. Ooh, yeah, that's so nice.
Resurrection.
Yeah.
From that's real Web good. Of Spider-Man 32, part four of the story.
And then also from the final section, or from the final issue, this one where he's in the sewers coming after Vermin as well. Just a big full page, muscly Spider-Man, the black suit. And then I kind of liked also just this these two pages, actually, which is basically after Peter's come out of the grave, he reunites with Mary Jane and then like sort of does some web slinging out to go confront Craven, basically like that. And then the next page is also where he kind of descends from the ceiling behind Craven wordlessly. Like, ooh, those are all good pages. I think though, I have to be greedy and pick the that resurrection page. Cause that's so nice. He's coming out of the grave in the rain with the, to, you know, his arm arm perfectly framing the tombstone and all that kind of stuff. Oh, that's so iconic. That's so great, you know. He's probably waterboarding himself with the mask, actually. You got to be careful about that, Spidey. But, you know.
Well, unusually for a film club episode, we will have Grail pages published on the social media in the few days after this episode comes out. And the splash page from Web of Spider-Man 32 will be Conrad's main Grail page, although I will post those other images as well.
Yeah, those other ones are honorable mentions, but I try to just have one Grail page, and that's definitely it.
And I'm going to guess... you know, like I say, Steve Ditko pages of Spider-Man beyond the reach of mortal men's budgets. But I'm going to guess this page of Spider-Man bursting from the grave, as you say, there's the rain, there's the mud. We're going to say that in this New York set story, mostly it's raining all the time.
Listen, when it needs to be, New York is very rainy for plot purposes.
But what a superb page. You've got rain, you've got lightning, you've got him emerging from the mud, the tombstone. I even like the fact that down the side of the tombstone is the credits, the creator credits. lettered down the side of the tombstone. That page has got it all, and I dread to think what that would cost us in the real world, Conrad.
Let's see. Sorry, I'm looking one up here, Eamon.
Okay,
I'm trying to see if there's one from this run on this page. I don't know. I don't see one from here. But like, okay, I see one that's, I think it's Spider-Man getting, yeah, it's the one from Secret Wars where he got the, where he first gets the black costume.
Yep.
And that is a smooth 3,360,000.
Oh. 3,360,000. I thought you were going to say 360,000, and I was going to start thinking, oh, I could probably sell the house. But
and then a couple other pages I'm looking at, just sort of at on the comic art tracker here. Two more from, or yeah, like one with like Spider-Man, Hulk, and Thor for like 280,000. A big Punisher for 100,000, and more for like 50,000 and 40,000. That seems like. The mid five figures seems like your big amounts, you know. Oh, yeah. No. Here's the black and white cover from Spectacular 131. So the one where Kraven in a Spider-Man suit is confronting Vermin, and that's $33,000.
Right. Big bucks for these big pages. I will post Conrad's pages when this episode comes out.
Wait, what's your Grail page, Eamon? I'm sorry, I forgot to ask. Well,
no, that's all right. I thought we might be headed for the Resurrection page, and as you've kindly left it open for me, I'm just going to cheat and take the cover for the same issue.
Ooh, very nice. Absolutely.
Which is, of course, the classic Spider-Man emerging from the grave cover to Web of Spider-Man 32, Part 4, Resurrection.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Rain, lightning, everything. Here lies Spider-Man. And I'll just say quickly, returning to a story beat, that the pages you've chosen or that you've mentioned where Spider-Man's back in the suit, says goodbye to MJ, and then swings off across a rainy New York, I'll just say that at that point, Peter Parker's been buried alive for 2 weeks, and he's not in great shape going off to find Kraven. Which is a nice moment in a way. It's a very sort of across the Spider-Verse moment. You know, a Spider-Man, he gets knocked down, but he always gets up, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, man, you know, there's just some great stuff. Yeah, like the reunion with MJ is really great. Honestly, like that series in the comic is really great, of him coming back. Him realizing it's been 2 weeks and just how angry he is about that. That's a really great story beat. Really funny when like he can Kraven's goons think that like, oh, he's been out for 2 weeks. He can't be that tough. And then they're like, oh no, we're in trouble. That sort of stuff. All great comic stuff. Absolutely.
It is great comics. This is fantastic story. If you've never read it, it is widely available. Kraven's Last Hunt is in trade paperback. It's in all sorts of essentials, collections. You can buy it on the Kindle. It's in the Marvel Unlimited app. It's great stuff. A really great comic, isn't it, Conrad?
Real good stuff. Listen, like, hey, you know, sometimes, yeah. I mean, I know the book club doesn't often delve into American comics, but this one's definitely worthy of look and sort of, you know, at least – crossing over in the era. I mean, this, you know, you have to think that, you know, this is a comic that, you know, in 1987 is something that they're probably reading the 2080 offices and thinking about how this could influence their own storytelling and stuff like that. I think it's something that is on the ground in the culture for that sort of thing, you know, and I think that, but like, I think it's worth looking at other sources and other comics just to kind of see what other people are looking at, to see, because obviously, you know, some of the more like wild 2000 AD things, when we get to like characters dying, characters thinking about like what their lives are worth and stuff, like, you know, can be inspired by this and other things. It's good stuff. Good times.
Good times. And as you say, 1987, the magazine hasn't started yet, but in the 90s, we will get crossovers of Dread from the magazine to the prog and back vice versa.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the start of that era. I mean, you know, like I said, they done it before, but we're really, the 80s is when you really start to get these big crossover events, like the late 80s, and then goes way overboard in the 90s of like, you know, listen, if you want to know what's going on, you're going to have to buy 15 comics this month. You know, that sort of era of things.
Right.
That leads to comics downfall, but then resurrection. Oh, it's a complicated business.
So I hope our regular listeners will forgive us this slight diversion into an American comic. As you said previously, Conrad, this is the book club within the brackets of the film club. So therefore, absolutely, we're allowing it.
Film club, book club.
Yeah, exactly. And I will tell people that Conrad will return because with a bit of luck, our next film club might also be a hybrid episode as we head off into spoilers. We might be going to prison in space, Conrad. We'll see.
Oh, I love space prison, Eamon. Top, top location for prisons.
So that'll do us for this episode of the Film Club Book Club Hybrid. Until the next time when we might be in a space prison, where can people find you on the net, Conrad?
Of course, spacespinner2000.com. I'm gonna, like, we're in the new year, new me. And the new me, Eamon, is one that gets back to editing and putting up podcasts. So sort of the old me as well. But, you know, it's something that I know certainly we've had more book club or more film clubs than Space Spinners this year. And that's something I want, or in 2024. And that's something I want to remedy in 2025. We'll be getting back to putting things out. There's things that are ready. I apologize, everybody. But be back soon.
It's fine. Great stuff. So keep watching spacespinner2000.com. Find all of my stuff at megacitybookclub.com, including links to all the socials where you can see these grail pages we've been talking about. Do give Craven's Last Hunt a read. If you see the movie Craven the Hunter, either in the theatre or on streaming, let us know what you thought. And that'll do us, I think, Conrad. All done.
Absolutely. Hey, this one, like I said earlier, been a long time coming in terms of our podcast plans, but I'm glad we finally did it and that, like, you know, we can sort of both put this one to bed and just, yeah, look back on some fun comics and good discussion here. Thank you very much, Eamon, for having me on. It's, of course, always a pleasure to be on the book club.
No trouble at all. Thank you, Conrad. The Costa Coffee in Ely and the Sony Spider-Verse have got a lot to answer for.
So, you know, it's terrible times, Eamon. Ridiculous scenes. All right.
Until next time, I'm Eamon.
I'm Conrad.
And we have been
Mega City Film Club.